Troop 706 to come forward and help us lead in the pledge of, help lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Troop 706. Please call the roll.
Mr. Schmidt?
Here.
Mr. Thornhill?
Here.
Mr. Caspel?
Here.
Mr. Dudley?
Here.
Ms. Anthony?
Here.
Ms. Hoppe?
Here.
Mr. McDavid?
Here. We have minutes from the regular council meeting of January 3rd, 2012. Are there any corrections? If not, may I have a motion and a second for approval?
So moved. Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. We have a request for adjusting the agenda. Ms. Anthony?
I'd move that we move from the consent agenda items B612 and R712, move them to new business.
It's R612.
And R612, thank you.
May I have a motion and second for approval of agenda with that change?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Mr. Caspel will abstain from voting on B412, B512, and B1312. I'm going to move that he be allowed to abstain. Or is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Welcome to the meeting. We have several opportunities for public comment during the public hearings, old business, new business, and we do have an open comment section at the end of the meeting. Each individual is entitled to 3 minutes. At the as your 3 minutes nears its ending, there'll be a red light on the podium. If you represent an organization, you may have 5 minutes. We'll make appointments to 4 boards and commissions. The first is the Mayor's Committee on Physical Fitness. There are 3 outstanding applicants for these 2 positions, but I'm going to appoint Mr. Steve Coleman and Mr. Joshua Hockett. For the Columbia Community Development Commission, we have 1 applicant for the Ward 4 vacancy. May I have a motion second to appoint Ronald Schmidt?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. For the Columbia Special Business District Board, we have 2 applicants for the 2 vacancies. May I have a motion and second to appoint David Maxwell and Valerie Shaw?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. For the Disabilities Commission, we have 1 applicant. May I have a motion and a second to appoint Lisa Zanetti?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. A public hearings, item A. Will the clerk please read item A?
Agenda item A is the construction of the Anderson Avenue PCCE number 15 sewer improvement project.
May I have staff report?
This proposed sewer improvement will impact 22 parcels you see on the map. Along West Broadway, Anderson Avenue, and West Ash Street. 14 of the owners submitted a petition to begin this process. The estimated cost is $350,000, paid for from the annual private common collector fund. John, anything you'd like to add?
I'll just add that there's 2 options. One is goes behind the houses in where the trees are located. Staff believes a better option is to go down the middle of the street, not impacting the neighbors. Be happy to answer any questions.
And that is the option that is included in item A?
Yes, sir.
That's the $350,000 recommendation.
Yes. Questions by council?
Have the neighbors weighed in on a preferred option?
They prefer it out in the street, as far as
And you do, too. Tell. Seems like we're done.
Do you have a question? There are no other questions. I'm going to open the public hearing. Would anyone from the public like to speak? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Any discussion by council? I'm going to move to direct staff to proceed with final plans, specifications, and construction of PCCE number 15, Anderson Avenue Sewer Improvement Project. May I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. We'll move to old business, B2-12. Will the clerk read the bill?
Council Bill 212 is an ordinance vacating street right-of-way along portions of Short Street and Walnut Street, directing the city clerk to have a copy of this ordinance recorded and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Staff, please.
This item is really related to the Short Street Garage project. It vacates portions of those streets and enables the construction. Tim is here with details.
Two different streets affected. Short Street, approximately 12 feet of its east side to be vacated. That'd be compensated by the same amount on the west side of the street, so that street is going to be realigned as part of the project. What that does is it enables the city to create a longer lot along Walnut that would be sold to First Light as part of the multi-use building project in front of the garage. The second street affected is Walnut Street. It's almost imperceptible, though. It's a matter of several inches near the northeast corner, and this creates a two rectangular parcel for First Light. Right now, it's a little uneven in its front-to-back dimensions. So that's the only purpose of the vacation there. So really, it's Short Street that's mainly affected.
Questions by council?
Has this matter been before planning and zoning?
It has not. We do have a final plat of subdivision on their docket. We're requesting that they table that so that we can incorporate the right-of-way vacation information, assuming council acts to approve this ordinance.
So we need to act before they take it up?
Right. And then the plat that they take action on will refer to the vacation of right-of-way.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak? Any council discussion? Please call the roll.
Council Bill 212, Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kessel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes. For the consent agenda, will the clerk read the bills?
Items on the consent agenda include policy resolution 412, bills 112, 312, 412, 512, 612, 712, 812, 912, 1012, 1112, 1212, and 1312, and resolutions 512, 812, 912, and 1012.
Please call the roll.
Policy resolution 412, bills 112, 312, 412, 512, 612, 712, 812, 912, 1012, 1112, 1212, 1312, and resolutions 512, 812, 912, and 1012. Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kessel?
Yes, on all bills except 412, 512, and 1312.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes. We'll move to new business. We have items R6-12 and R7-12. If there are no objections, we'll have one public hearing for both, and I'll ask the clerk to read both bills.
Council Bill 612 is a resolution authorizing the city manager to execute an agreement with the Central Missouri Humane Society for Animal Control Services, and Council Bill 712 is a resolution authorizing an agreement with the Central Missouri Humane Society for Municipal Shelter Funding.
Staff, please.
These items are fairly straightforward. I'll ask Stephanie to maybe give us a little brief look at history.
These are two annual agreements that we have between the City of Columbia and the Central Missouri Humane Society. The first one is the annual contract, which we use to provide for the care of the animals that we take into our custody, so to speak, by the Animal Control Program while we are waiting for return to owner. There are generally animals that are in violation of city ordinances. That contract is covers a small amount for office space, kennel facilities, which is $94,654 per year. That gives us access to 30 cages per day. That works out to being $8.64 per animal cage. We also have veterinary medical services at just under $6,000. And then that contract includes 150 vouchers for sterilization for animals. And they give us basically vouchers that we can give out to low-income members of the public. That's something new that we negotiated about 3 years ago with the contract. This is an arrangement that has been going on between the city and the Humane Society for probably more than 40 years, near as I can tell. The contract is done on their calendar year, which begins in January. It's always included in our budget. I'd be happy to take any questions on that. The second one is a newer contract. That's the Municipal Shelter Funding Agreement. And probably about 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, the Humane Society was having some financial difficulties. There were some challenges with the contracts that we had, and the City Council at that time decided to take money from council reserves, $20,000, with the goal of increasing the number of animals that were spayed or neutered. And so this is a totally separate contract from the one that provides for the care of the animals we take in. And what it does is it allows us, they give us 150 vouchers for spay or neuter for dogs and 100 for cats. It allows us, it expands their shelter veterinary medicine program by providing 800 dogs impounded by animal control at entry with parvovirus and canine distemper vaccines to keep the health of the animal population going while they are there at the Humane Society and to protect all the animals. And then it also is a new thing that started with this contract is that they began to, selling city licenses for animals that were adopted to people within the city. So that contract's $20,000. That contract has been the same amount for the last couple of years. So, but we do keep them separate because they're separate agreements from the normal care of our animals. So I'd be happy to take any questions.
Any questions from council for either R6 or R7?
Just have a quick question on R7. So as far as the $20,000 is concerned, we're going to pay that $10,000 now and $5,000 with each report.
With each report, yes.
Reports are containing the 1 through 5 under your report section.
Correct.
And that is to determine whether the money is being used appropriately.
Right, and we don't make the payment until we receive the report.
Okay. So.
Any other questions? Would anyone from the public like to speak?
Good evening. My name is Ann Peters. I live at 3808 Berrywood Drive. Thank you for pulling this from the consent agenda and allowing us to ask a few questions. I've volunteered at our shelter for a number of years, and when Mr. Thornhill asked for information a number of years ago, I read everything that came from his inquiry, the score report, and I followed that through for quite a long time. I have some questions about the number of impoundments that happens a year, are 800. Are those, I'd like to have a breakdown of how many of those are lost animals, which would be running at large, and how many of those are for dog bites, and what's the average stay for those animals? I don't know if staff has those answers this evening. Some of the issues that I have with the shelter right now is that they close at 5 o'clock. And if you work till 5 and you have a lost pet, it's not possible for you to get to the shelter and look for your animal. if it's in the lost part, it's with animal control, and that section of the shelter is not open to the public, so you can't come in and look for your pet. They're closed on Sundays, which is a day, if you're working Monday through Friday, is a day that you would have to go to the shelter and look for a new animal or your animal. One of the questions that was raised about the voucher program was that cuts out any local vets from having an opportunity to build a rapport with a new adoptive family or an animal. All services are done in-house, and although they give a packet to the new owner that's honored by a lot of veterinarians in Columbia for a free visit, there's nothing for the vet to do on the free visit, so most people don't take advantage of that. So it's at least a year before they ever start looking to build a rapport with a vet. And I'd ask the city to look into that and possibly getting a list of local vets that would honor those vouchers and start bringing local veterinarians into the issues that the shelter's dealing with and getting more people involved. There are a number of issues that I would like to see the health department review. As far as impoundment goes, I've lived in a number of different cities, and in many cities, on the first dog bite, you're allowed, if you have a fence jar, to impound your dog at your home. And I'd like to know how many of the impoundments for bites in Columbia resulted in the owner being able to quarantine their animal at home. That if by doing so, that reduces the number of animals that go into the shelter that the city is paying for, the taxpayers are paying for. And another issue that I'd like looked at is when there's a dog bite, there's no requirement to have the animal evaluated by a certified behavioralist. I just spent $175 to have one of my dogs evaluated, and the owner goes to. It made a tremendous difference in my pet and in me and how I handle my animals. And I think that's an option that we should look at to facilitate better pet-human relations. And that's something that we're not looking at. So what I'm asking is if you would table this request for 60 days, and have a number of these issues addressed through the health department and through the community, have a community forum possibly. And I realize that we need the space for impoundment, so if you could possibly maybe pay them for 60 days and we should be able to have this process finished, that would seem realistic to me. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but the city of Columbia owns the land and the building that shelter is on. And the contract that the city has with them is as long as they have a shelter there, they are allowed to use the building and the grounds. Questions?
I have a question. Ms. Peters, are you here representing a group today?
I am with a group, but I am not representing them. I asked to have this pulled without asking them. It was of my own accord. I informed them that I had done that, and they said that they would like to come to this forum, and they asked if we'd wear our shirts. They are actually having, tomorrow night is their coming out party, their meeting, a community meeting at the library, and they weren't planning on being here, but when I informed them that I was coming, they wanted to come and present some information to you.
I have one more question. In terms of the items that you've just outlined that are of concern to you and possibly your group, have you had an opportunity to address that with the Humane Society?
No, I haven't. I became aware of this through a Tribune article, and that was this weekend. So had we known a month or so ahead of time that this funding request was coming up, we certainly would have tried to address it with them.
Thank you very much.
I have a question.
I have a question.
So, given the concerns you outlined and the ordinances before us, how will delaying it change, possibly change the ordinance or a decision on the ordinance? You've asked that maybe we approve funding for 60 days, but not for the entire year.
The change would come if there was a change in the voucher program where the vouchers, percentage of the vouchers were offered to veterinarians at large. That would change. If we look at our city ordinance and we look at their hours and whether or not, because of their hours, animals are impounded longer or not found soon enough by their owners, that would reduce the number of animals that are in the shelter and how long they're there, and that could reduce the cost to the city. If we reevaluate the health department requirements and home confinement is allowed more often, that would reduce the number of animals that are in the shelter, and that could bring down what the city pays significantly. It would also open up more runs for the Humane Society to be able to have more room for their animals. And the last thing I would point out is any animal that walks out of the shelter is a consumer. When you look at your veterinarian, they have a lot of money in their education, they have staff, they have front office staff, they also have veterinarian technicians. They are a huge part of the small businesses in Columbia. So I think we should try to do everything we can to get as many animals adopted and,
thank
work,
you.
And work with our vets.
Thank you very much. Would anyone else like to speak?
That's the question I was going to ask her.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to speak? Seeing none, council discussion.
I'd like to ask whether possible or how do you think it will affect things to do what was requested? And
okay. Well, let me clarify on a couple of things. First of all, there's two contracts here. So the first contract is for the care of animals impounded by animal control. That's the larger of the contract. The bulk of that money goes to housing those animals, and it is a set amount. We have up to 30 cages per day. The cages we are not using, CMHS is welcome to use when we don't need them. So we're not just letting 30 cages sit open. We also have the spay-neuter vouchers built into that. That has not always historically been there. That's something that's been a joint effort of the city and the Humane Society the last few years. It also includes the vet care. It also includes a small amount of office space. So to me, operationally, we really need that contract to continue on because we don't have another place for our animals at this time. The other one with the $20,000 with the municipal contract, like I said, again, I kind of give you a little bit of background on that, but initially the council was thinking about just giving the Humane Society $20,000 additional dollars because times were tough and they recognized that more animals were coming in from Columbia than were being brought in by animal control. So the council, that $20,000 initially when those conversations were going on, was they were going to give that money, but instead we tied some additional spay-neuter incentives, something so that you could be purchasing something for that money rather than just giving $20,000. So that is a little bit of a change. I did want to point out a couple of things. On the question about impoundments for your animals, if it is a first bite, the animal has a city license and is up to date on their rabies vaccination, we will allow the animal to be impounded at home. That is in our city ordinances and that is our policy. But if it's, but we can also, and I shouldn't say it's not a shall, it's a may, because of, depending on how aggressive the bite is and the circumstances around it. And we have, the spay-neuter program, again, that's something we have targeted our vouchers towards people of low income, and that's our goal. When we have, we actually have worked with our social services staff in the health department, people that have WIC eligibility, food stamps, any number of programs available to them like that are eligible for those. And often we find that those are the folks that have the least resources to go to the vet. So they aren't establishing, because veterinary care is expensive. And so in the areas where we are having some of our biggest trouble is where we have animals running loose. We have intact animals running loose in lower income areas often with people that don't have the resources to go to the vet for that service. And so we feel this is a good blend. We have a great relationship with the vets in town. We don't want to take away business from them as well. There is definitely room for lots more spay and neuters.
I guess from my perspective, these are two funding resolutions. These are not issues. This is, in my opinion, not the right time to deal with operational
policy
issues at the Humane Society. I respect their input into this, and I suspect the proper forum would be to, I don't know, the Board of Health or through city staff
and
or whatever.
The Humane Society Board
or
as well.
Through the Humane Society Board. Those are operational issues which are not, in my opinion, relevant to the fact that we have to fund this operation. We have for 40 years. So from my perspective, we have to provide the funding. And I acknowledge and appreciate their input and interest in dealing with the operational strategies of the Humane Society. And I think there are better forums to do that than this council.
I'd like to make a comment on that. I agree that it needs to be funded. We're right in the middle of January, and this is a contract that really is where they're already providing the services, I believe. My issue is that we've got a fairly organized large, even though they're doing their kickoff tomorrow, they've got a large group of people that are not happy with the policies at the Humane Society and have not had any success in addressing those concerns with the Humane Society. And we as a city have a contract with the Humane Society. They are a not-for-profit. They have their own board. But if they're not responding to some constituents' concerns, I would like to hear some alternatives as to how they can go about, how those at least their concerns can be heard and responded to, because they're not being responded to, I don't believe, from the Humane Society. So I guess I would like some direction from you as to how that might occur.
Yeah.
Well, I will point out that right now they are without an executive director. They're searching for an executive director right now. So things are sort of, in holding pattern. The board has actively been searching nationwide, so they are moving ahead on that. Operationally, they do close at 5 and they close on Sunday, and I believe that was financial. They're not running a large budget. They are largely dependent on what comes from veterans. You know what I mean? So I'm sympathetic to that, but I think that they're very committed to trying to change that, but it takes resources. It's going to take their leadership coming in and having a director in place as well. That's my thought. As an outsider that's looking in, that's my take on it.
Now, we approved this as part of the budget, and this is just
correct.
Renewing the contract for 1 year.
Correct.
And I suppose there's some reason why that the contract comes up now instead of
on their fiscal year.
On their fiscal year. It would be very interesting to hear the results of this group meeting with the Humane Society. These seem like eminently reasonable suggestions. We've also heard from the TNR people who aren't here tonight unless some of these are the same people. I think we should just keep our eye on this as council, but I see the mayor. I think we need to go ahead and fund this because this is something that needs to be done. And but we would hope that the Humane Society would listen to some of these ideas, and I understand the problems about they're in the same problems with money that the city is. Maybe the city can keep an eye on that, which I'm sure you are, because there are some innovative ideas here that may help them with money, and so we'll see how responsive they are.
I think each of us would appreciate input from this group to each of us, through our email sites or telephones, because we're interested in knowing what ideas you have and what you can do to improve the care of the animals.
I also will say I appreciate the problem that I mean, it's hard for us on council, and it was much harder before I was on council. You often don't find out about things until right before they happen, and so there isn't really time to do research and make phone calls and set up meetings and stuff. So I appreciate the situation you're in, but it sort of, I basically agree with Bob. We ought to just move ahead with this and keep our eye on this, and hopefully, because hopefully we can incorporate some of these ideas in the next budget cycle.
I appreciate their.
And also, I'd like to ask for, I can certainly ask for a report during the report section, but I think we need to keep a little more pressure on the Humane Society to respond, be responsive to our constituents. So I will ask for a report in the report section if that's the appropriate course, so that we, instead of getting, you know, some short answers right now, I'd like some dialogue between the groups and a report on that.
Any other discussion? Call a roll on R6-12.
Council Bill 612, Mr. Schmidt?
Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kessel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes. R7-12.
Council Bill 712, Mr. Schmidt?
Oh, there are two. Yes.
Mr. Thornhill?
Yes.
Mr. Kessel?
Yes.
Mr. Dudley?
Yes.
Ms. Anthony?
Yes.
Ms. Hoppe?
Yes.
Mr. McDavid?
Yes. Introduction, first reading. Please read the bills.
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Policy Resolution 1112 and bills 1412, 1512, 1612, 1712, 1812, 1912, 2012, 2112, 2212, 2312, 2412, and 2512, first reading.
Report 6-12 is a report from Greyhound, who is proposing to use Wabash Station. And this is, we will not be acting on that. If anything, we'll be asking you to negotiate a contract.
Yes.
But go ahead and give us the background.
Well, for years now, we've tried to get Wabash to come downtown and do their pickups down
Greyhound.
Here at the Wabash. Pardon? Greyhound, sorry. Greyhound. Yes, sir. And we, they finally changed their business model. They're wanting to come downtown. We'll do the ticketing for them. They're going to pay us to do that. And so we will earn about $54,000 thereabouts annually. We think that's conservative. We think it could be more than that because we think more people will ride the bus as long as it's downtown and they can get around. So we will want to go ahead with this and bring back a agreement with Greyhound to council for approval.
I have a question. You know, I think it's great to have the two together. It makes sense. My question is, how much staff time will it take? I just want to make sure it doesn't take away from the present services that the staff gives to for our bus system, and that they have sufficient time, and we don't have to add half-time staff, and the $54,000 isn't sufficient. So
we should not have to add staff. They will put their software on our system for us to use and ticketing.
And so you feel that the staff members can handle that and still give the same service, that service won't deteriorate?
Yes, ma'am.
It's to give a number, it's 25 passengers a day, talking about from Columbia, and 171 that passed through. So the staff work really is focused, I would think, on the 25, which is a pretty small amount of work, really.
Yeah. I think, yeah, okay.
I at the Martin Luther King celebration last night, they had flash from the past where they had people act out characters and their experiences from the past. And I'm not an actor, but I remember coming into the bus station when it was at 9th and Cherry, where the old CC's broiler was, and it is really, it will be a big service to this community if, especially the people who, lower income people who depend on the bus, if it comes to a more convenient place. So I think this is wonderful that they have come around to do this, and there's actually a way for us to be remunerated for the extra effort that the city will have. And I guess they took a lesson from Megabus.
Well, and Megabus is regional, and, you know, Greyhound is much more national, I think.
So this will be a good thing for the city and for the people.
Any other comments? I'm going to move to direct staff to negotiate a contract with Greyhound Lines International and to bring the contract back to the council for approval. Can I have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Report 7-12 is our request to close Broadway for the Soapbox Derby for about the 80th consecutive year. So there is precedent for this?
There's absolutely precedent. Staff recommends council approval.
Comments by council?
It's a great event.
May I have a motion to approve the street closure?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Report 8-12 is a motion to amend the neighborhood organization policy resolution to allow for, I guess, a step down, right? A homeowner association that doesn't meet the criteria for a neighborhood association. Is that a way to look at it?
That's right. It's really a two-tiered system, and I think really allows for what homeowners associations are looking for, which is that communication, that notice for things that go on around neighborhoods that really we focus on neighborhood organizations with. In this case, we wouldn't call them neighborhood organizations because they really their focus really is that homeowners association. So we have, I think, a pretty elegant concept here that we are stealing from Albuquerque, if I understand. So, Tim, any?
Well, it's kind of a concept of associate membership. I mean, we recognize neighborhood organizations have a process for that, but there are homeowner associations that would like to be notified of important city actions that affect their areas, and this would be a way to get the privileges of that notice without having to create a separate organization, a separate set of documents. And the staff and neighborhood services did find a useful example in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that has exactly this type of system where it's really two tiers as the manager.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about the contact issue, but that's exactly what this group is talking about. That it's very handy to have a neighborhood contact that gets information out, and I see the point. I mean, informally, ONS has treated, has worked with them as if they were neighborhood associations, but this this will help a lot because this has come up a lot, and it's great.
May I have a motion?
Barbara has a question.
Yeah, I have a couple. A question and a point. I think it's good that we have more contact with the homeowners association if they aren't neighborhood associations. My one concern is that typically and maybe always, almost always, the homeowner association does not include tenants or renters, and 60% of Columbia is rental housing. So, Adam, on the one hand, I sort of see this as maybe discouraging the homeowners associations to becoming neighborhood associations, which a lot have done in the Sixth Ward, and then include the renters also. So they have a true neighborhood. It's very inclusive. So that's one thought and my one concern. And then my other concern is if we do allow homeowner associations to get notice, which I think is important, that I think it needs to be clear in the ordinance that the homeowner associations not only doesn't wish to be legally recognized, but they don't meet the criteria for neighborhood associations. Namely, they don't include all people in the area, namely renters. So when that comes back, I think it's important that the public knows and everyone understands that there is a difference. It's not just a legal recognizing. And then my second question is, now there should be, there'll probably be some overlap where we have homeowners associations that are maybe partly or all, partly in neighborhood associations, or there may be overlap, or they may be identical. So how do you deal with that? I know in our neighborhood association, there half of it also is in a homeowners association, which is different and has different rules based on when they bought the property. So
I think this would probably be an either or, because there are a number of neighborhood organizations that have formed already that do have a coincident area that is a homeowner association, might even have restrictive covenants. But that's kind of that, when they meet as homeowner association, that's kind of their affair.
So if they're
in
included
regard to
in
their interactions with city government, they're a neighborhood organization that's been recognized. So I don't think we'd maintain two sets of books on one geographic area.
Right, that if they're
not the intent.
The purpose of the neighborhood associations is sort of to create a dialogue between the citizens in the city and to help the city provide assistance for the neighbors to gather, and then it's our forum for getting public input on it's one of our major forums on getting public input on zoning and other changes. And so, you know, I see Barbara's point in that the neighborhood associations will, you know, the homeowner associations will operate with specific rules, and that may exclude the tenants, but for purposes of negotiating or for purposes of disseminating information and sharing ideas with the city, one would think they would include their tenants too. That's an interesting.
I actually was the one who asked for this and have been pushing this for this since I've been on planning and zoning, and really for the notice requirement. I mean, being living in one of the homeowners associations out in the Fifth, a lot of them actually have, and I know the issue with the tenants, but a lot of these larger subdivisions out there, the homeowners associations prohibit rental of the property. You know, and I just think that, you know, we
probably some of the newer
homeowners. On the newer homeowners, yeah. The newer larger ones in the southwest corner, and there's just been no opportunity for us to receive notices as you know, and I think this is a clear, you know, this is, we are really under this, and I've already had complaints from some people in the homeowners associations that were being treated as second-class citizens. But I, you know, the issue for me has always been the notice, and I think this clearly helps solve that issue, and I would like to see it go forward.
Yeah, why don't we just do it and see if it works?
And if we could just add the clarification to make sure that in the ordinance it sort of distinguishes the homeowners association from the neighborhood association, I think that would do it.
I think it does that, doesn't it?
I think so. I think
they're just called homeowner associations in that section of the proposed policy resolution.
And one would hope that is the.
We have two groups, neighborhood associations and homeowners organizations. Okay. So it's,
and one would hope that if a homeowner association that isn't also included in a neighborhood association, if the contact gets something from the city about a crime issue or a zoning issue, that they would notify the tenants as well as the property owners. That would be common sense, which unfortunately we can't legislate that. So
in view of the fact that we'll monitor the outcome of this based on Ms. Hoppe's points, mm-hmm. I'm going to move that we adopt the amendment to the neighborhood organization policy resolution. May I have a second?
Second.
For discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay. Report 912 has to do with the airport. We have a very nice 1969 airport with room for 50 passengers only that is totally non-ADA compliant, or it's not compliant with ADA. Should we decide to build a new terminal, it will take a public vote. Should we ask for a public vote, that will take council action to put it on the ballot. But before we go down that road, I'm advised by our city attorney that we need some clarifying state legislation to clear up, I guess, ambiguity is the right word?
I think when we originally adopted the current hotel motel tax, there was no state legislation really dealing with it. So there was no problem with the charter city going ahead and doing that. Since that time, there's been a number of amendments to the state statutes which deal with hotel motel tax. And I think, you know, although it's not clear, I think someone could make an argument that the legislative action has acted as a restriction on the power of charter cities to enact these kind of taxes. So I think it would be helpful to have clarifying legislation.
So you have written proposed legislation that we would submit, and I've spoken with our local state legislators, and this is the clarity they're asking for. This is what Jefferson City did last year, am I correct?
Correct.
Any questions from council?
I have a question about the wording on the proposed legislation. It says the tax is paid by any transient guests at hotels and motels. Does that mean that a citizen of Columbia can rent a hotel and not pay the tax?
The language in the proposed statute is the language that's reflected in our current ordinance, and I think the transient is not defined as someone who doesn't live in Columbia necessarily. So I think they're covered. Whoever rents is covered by the tax.
Is this intended, that language intended to, so that a Columbia citizen who rents a hotel room for a year and that becomes his or her home?
There is I can't recall what the exact language in the ordinance is, but I think it's like 30 or 31 days.
Okay.
If it's longer than that, it's not transient.
Okay. So given that, I'm going to move that the council ask Columbia state legislators to sponsor this included legislation, that we alert our contract lobbyists about this included legislation, and that the council pursues passage of the included legislation during the upcoming legislative session. May I have a second?
Second.
Discussion.
Well, I have just one thing. Just to point out that then this increase in hotel tax could be used for the airport. It could be used to help transit during the gap we have in the last year or so. So there's some options there with this legislation.
Right. We can write the ordinance any way we choose, should we put it to the voters.
Right, and I would guess that would be my part of the discussion. I got a call from a distraught hotel owner today and assured them that this is, there will be quite a bit of public discussion.
Absolutely.
Of the whether this is a good idea, and the public will decide, and there will be lots of chance for input. So just want to get that in the record, that there will be a full debate, and that this is merely clarifying legislation, and we better do it before they get bogged down at the end of the legislative season down at the Capitol.
Any other comments? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The next report is 10-12, which our recommendations from the Downtown Community Improvement District. Any comments from staff?
Well, just to sum up, this communication is from the CID in an ongoing conversation about the process we follow for street closures. And really, it's part of a larger conversation about special events in the city in general. And so, as staff continues its work to streamline those processes, basically overhauling what we can to make improvements, if council would like, staff will include these recommendations in its work and then come back to you with a sort of an omnibus approach to special events, which include street closures.
And I think in view of the local private initiative for Tigertown, for the upcoming SEC Alliance, I'm sure staff will be working this into that initiative.
Absolutely. And there is a sense of urgency about
right.
it.
So there is no action that the council needs to take on this tonight?
I don't believe so. Yeah. At this point, staff intends to include it in our thinking, and unless, I guess, barring any opposition
and
to
and
that.
We'll the more that. We can do in policy and the less with ordinance, the better, because dealing with it as an ordinance is going to be onerous, and we cannot foresee the future. And dealing with it on a case-by-case basis has been somewhat arbitrary, although that's our prerogative. It's not a good idea.
So we'll move on, unless somebody has any other comments on that. We'll move on to report 11-12, which has to do with sidewalk snow removal. Barb, did you ask for a report on this a year ago? Is that where it started?
Quite a while ago. Yeah.
It was at least a year ago, I think. And you asked for a report, and it went through staff onto the Bicycle Pedestrian Commission, who addressed this and came up with some recommendations. Staff comments about these recommendations?
My observation is that fundamentally it's an informational report. There is quite a bit of good work included here. BikePed did do a lot of research, and that's presented here. You may choose to follow up on some of these or ask for staff to follow up on some, but at this point it's a lot of information, and it's in your hands.
Questions from council?
Well, I know this has been the public has been quite interested, and there's been several newspaper reports, and I've received a variety of email, and I think the big concern from the report is the concern of focusing just on the downtown area, and that there's other priority areas throughout the city, and maybe a better approach would be looking at snow removal in priority areas like we do for snow removal for streets. So those walkways that go to school, the school routes, the walk areas to the bus routes, the sidewalks and pedways to the main shopping areas, and look at that throughout the city rather than just saying all residential and the entire area downtown should be focused on.
Yeah. I really think this is a wonderful piece of work. The Bicycle and Pedestrian Commission has been working on this forever, and this is a perennial problem. And I have received some very interesting comments. One is from people who live on West Broadway, and they say, well, how can I shovel a sidewalk that's barely there, you know, where the sidewalk is crumbled well beyond the point of usefulness? What's the point of, you know, how can they shovel it? Because you're going to pick up the concrete with the snow. So that's a very valid point. Another point, which we've all heard, I'm sure, from our constituents, which I've had quite a few, you go and you shovel your sidewalk, and then the city plows come by. Well, if you have a job, if you have any kind of limited ability to shovel the snow, how are you going to do that? Because you've done it, and then it gets undone for you, or it snows while you're at work, et cetera, et cetera. There's been quite a bit of discussion about CMCA's volunteer initiative, some of the information included in here talks about the city taking over some of the shoveling for the priority routes. We're in a real hard place here because every time it snows, I get complaints from people that they're supposed to shovel their sidewalk, and then I get complaints from people with disabilities and the elderly who are trapped in their houses because the sidewalks are impassable. And so this may not be, I mean, this, but this has gone on for years, and this is really the best and most concrete recommendation we've had. It's going to be hard. There's going to be complaints either way. And when I was on the Bicycle and Pedestrian Commission, the emphasis was on education. People don't really know that they're supposed to do this, and of course there's no penalty at present, so the requirement to shovel your walk doesn't really, isn't really very meaningful. And so if we, I don't know if there would be an economical way for us to do the education portion and to support the volunteer efforts. The other thing that I don't get is you look at the area on the map here, and we've got tons of able-bodied people who need work. And why, I don't know if it's feasible for the city to pay people during snow emergencies and say everybody who can show up will give you a shovel. That's what Giuliani did in the snow emergencies in New York, because you just can't get the machinery in on these sidewalks. I can't see, I mean, John, I should probably, I mean, you can enlighten me here, but I don't know if you can really buy a sidewalk machine that's going to work. And we have all these able-bodied people. I'd rather see it see us spending it on people rather than machines. But you can maybe answer that question.
Of course, they do make sidewalk machines that do remove snow. But the issue is you know, like you said, which comes first, you know, the street, which people want you to do, and then you can undo the sidewalks, but it's going to take longer than the time that allows in this recommendation.
And I'm just wondering if it's, I suppose a risk manager will tell us why we can't do this, but it would seem to me that we could do like New York City and employ people, people who are there who could do this very easily.
Well, 31 miles of sidewalks, a lot, you know. You know, who gets first priority? And if you, like you say, if you shovel it out and I cover it back up, then what?
Right, and that's why you almost need someone who's in the area who's responsible for that. And I would certainly encourage people to help an elderly or neighbor or a neighbor with a disability this winter. It's good exercise, and I think we ought to be looking long-term at a combination of volunteer effort and maybe some paid effort to employ some people in the community to go, you know, because getting those machines over all of our sidewalks in as bad a shape as they are is going to be another issue, too.
We do hire Job Point to do a lot of our bridges that, you know, are not maintained by the private entity.
Right. New York City, or the Doe Fund does a lot in New York City, and I guess Job Point would be kind of the equivalent here, but that's good to hear that, that you do that already. And so hopefully we can take this report and do as much as we can with it. I see people's complaints that, you know, how do I shovel a sidewalk that's not there, and what do I do? Why would I be getting a ticket if the city comes back? But if we could, is if there's any money for doing the education piece and encouraging the volunteer piece, and maybe we can look at more through Job Point or some other agency for next year. I'd really like to see that.
You know, I'd like to add to what Mr. Schmidt said. You know, the next report talks about our culture of volunteerism. That's very profound in this community. It's something we can be proud of. And, you know, I think healthy people given an awareness will, you know, be part of the community and do their part. Some of the elderly and disabled who need the sidewalks also have sidewalks that they are unable to clear. And whatever organization could put this together, there are a lot of able-bodied young people over at the university and our public school system who could enter the volunteer culture we have in Columbia, and I think we could do this, you know, as a team. I think we could the whole would surpass what individuals could do.
Exactly. This is something that it's almost, it's really kind of hard to ask the government to do this because it's so complicated. The neighbors, the people who live there, know where the sidewalks are. So. This may be, I'd just like to echo Bob's point that, yeah, we need to be looking to volunteers and looking to ourselves.
for a specific action item for staff, I would like staff to identify priority walking routes, and so we can make that public, the public, and then focus on enforcing that. What was interesting is
not this. You want more than that?
Yeah.
Throughout the city, yeah, not just downtown, but in all of our schools, to all of the business areas, to the hospitals. So that includes the regional hospital. So to really have some priority sidewalk clearing routes, as other cities do. I know Fort mm-hmm. Collins does. And then what was interesting is I received a rather detailed email of someone, and I think some other council members received this also, who last snow season identified every single house on Fairview 48 hours after two snow events, and pretty much 31 houses had the sidewalk cleared, 40 not cleared, and 6 partially cleared, but he noticed that most all of the driveways were cleared. So it creates a problem where half of the community is clearing the sidewalk and wants to use it, half of the community hasn't cleared the sidewalk, so the other half, who are responsible, can't use it. So there's this clear problem, and especially if it's on a main route, then we need to do something, as other communities do, to clear those routes and bill people. But I don't want to do it selectively to yeah. certain communities. But I just think as we put more emphasis on it, people will clear it. And in the past, in Columbia, the snow never stayed more than half a day, so we didn't have this problem. But in the last few years, we have. This year, it looks like we may not have any snow problem at all. But it's good to have a policy and enforcement in place. And then just the last thing I want to mention, there are some places that I think the city needs to take over the ownership of the sidewalk, because it is the sidewalks are so important to the community and so disconnected from the homeowner's property that no one, you wouldn't expect anyone to clear these sidewalks. On Old 63, there is a 30-foot wall that backs up to houses on Cliff Drive, and the city widened the road and put the wall, and there's a 15-foot fence above that. No one would expect those people to come down and clear that large area. So I'd like to see the city contact those owners and see if they will give the city the sidewalk, and then the city would be responsible. Also, there's by Chapel Hill, there's houses that back up to well-traveled streets down steep slopes and woods, and those people never have cleared the sidewalk, and most reasonable people really wouldn't expect them to. I think those are the ones that the city needs to take over. And again, those are main walk areas for the public.
Well, in partial answer to your question, the Bicycle Pedestrian Commission put an awful lot of work into this map. I appreciate what they must have done is exclude areas. They must have focused on this area for reasons of simplicity, and Public Works could do is what they did with the 10 intersections where you guys came to BikePed and asked for 10 intersections to work on, and I guess we've done all those 10 intersections now. Because I think we did six of the 10 were part of the, got included when we got the gutabout money. And then, That might be a way to bring some focus here and to reassure the public that we're not going to be sending out tickets. We're studying a policy, and we can do the two parts, the parts we've already talked about, which is to, you know, the volunteerism. We really, right now, this winter, the only thing we can do is ask ourselves to help ourselves and do the job point thing. I'd love to see that expanded. I'd love to talk to you about ways to do that. A similar thing, and I don't know if it would help to coordinate all of this, but yeah, where the snow is even more important than the building and maintenance in terms of the city taking responsibility, and of course we don't have any control over the MoDOT right away, so that's another problem.
I'm not hearing any consensus from the council as far as legislating a recommendation that if the city shovel sidewalks and build back to the owners. I'm not hearing that. Somebody wants to make that. I would also say that, you know, putting out a very happy, positive PSA, you know, during snow and encouraging, you know, people to do it for the good of the community wouldn't hurt, and it couldn't cost that much money.
So, yeah, as much encouragement as we can do that,
right,
within our budget, that would be great if you guys could.
Assuming that doesn't cost that much money.
Well, on some of the areas that Barbara was talking about on Chapel Hill and on Forum, or, you know, where the steep places where you're very disconnected from the houses, we now have a plan where people take care of the medians and the grass, this median taken care of by, and then a group is taking care of the grass and the flowers. You can do the same thing with the sidewalks.
Yeah.
Because that neighborhood is going to be using that sidewalk.
Right, exactly.
That's just as they're going to enjoy the median.
So as you have the people taking care of that, take care of the sidewalk, yeah.
So we can identify those areas, right, and seek a sponsor.
So let's take, can we get consensus on the volunteer and job point part of it? Can the city maybe take, help coordinate all of that? Because we have CMCA, we have job point, we have various volunteer efforts. Is there something between ONS and Public Works that you could do with the money you have for this year?
Well, you saw the intern project where a brochure was developed, and that emphasizes, I think, voluntary effort to clear sidewalks. So we can continue that program, and then we can coordinate with those organizations you mentioned, see when they would be available and in what terms, how many person hours they could commit to the task, that sort of thing.
Right.
So you have them on call as a resource.
Right.
So they can refer people to, or maybe refer them to people.
Right, and because that might be the way to, you know, that might be the way to marshal the volunteers if there was more sort of organization between all the different groups that want to help, and if ONS could either lead that or find a private group to lead that, that would be great.
Yeah, I think we'd be looking for team leaders or crew leaders, so our contacts are reasonable or can be made within reasonable time, and then they spread the word to their volunteers.
Right. Is that something we can do? Do we have consensus on that?
I think we do.
Okay.
And that sort of lends us into the next report, which is on volunteerism. And again, we have that culture. And if we can incorporate the need for sidewalk clearance into this culture, I think that we could get some traction that way. You know, we had almost 50,000 hours of service with the city from volunteers in the last fiscal year, with an estimated 6,000 residents who participated in one way or another through multiple volunteer organizations. I guess they even considered the city council as volunteers, didn't they? It's kind of nice to get a little stature there, but again, this is part of a culture which makes Columbia special, and I see it really as incorporating the previous issue. If we could leverage both issues together, I think we could celebrate our volunteerism and help with the snow problem. Does anybody have any comments on the volunteer report 12-12?
If I may, two things. One, this is remarkable, and I would say, in my experience, fairly unique. This this amount of volunteerism at a city level is tremendous. This is 25 full-time staff. That's what it equates to. So that's an incredible force multiplier if you think about it that way.
Well,
just if I might turn the clock back a little bit, I think I'm following everything on the sidewalk issue except the area. Would you like us to come back with a priority route map like we did with snow routes citywide, or should we focus on the recommendation of Bike and Ped and really take a sort of a phase one area and deal with
those? I think if you sent it back to Bike Ped with Barbara's comments, they would do that for you, because they probably went through all this discussion and decided to say arterials within the business loop, the stadium business loop. They probably did that as an approximation after many, many meetings of debating this. I mean, they've been doing this for years. So I think if you went back to them with Barbara's recommendations, they would probably already have that list.
We're comfortable with that.
I think that's a consensus. Is there any objection? Seeing none, I think that's a consensus.
Ask Bike and Ped for a citywide route
map. Yeah, and then they could come up with a list, and then maybe we could use that to focus our volunteer effort. And then when the snow removal comes around for next year, we can talk about if there's a way to employ people in a snow emergency with hand shovels to do those priority routes.
Thank you for that.
And I was very, I'm turning the clock forward so we can all get out of here. I was very pleased when I came back here and found out that there was a volunteer coordinator who's now in ONS. And I think that volunteer coordinator helps a lot, and I think the city's done, the people, Columbia is remarkable that they step up, but people have been helped a lot by having the volunteer coordinator and the city's staff, now all of the ONS, all of that effort to help coordinate that. And I think that's really wonderful that we do that.
I would challenge the coordinator to incorporate the snow removal part of it in here, as we've blended both reports together.
I would just like to add, I think that, again, is the beauty of Columbia, that there are so many citizens who are so interested in the community and the city and who volunteer. And I've always thought that was one of our tremendous strengths. So we should keep it going and grow it.
Let's move to 13-12. Are there any comments or questions about the transfer of funds?
I'd like to congratulate Public Works on their prudence in the Mexico gravel to route PP effort. The estimated budget was $4.5 million, and that project was finished in about $3.1 million, so they put almost $400,000 back in the road tax revenue fund to be used somewhere else. It's a great job.
Why'd they come in under so much? Does anybody know?
Anything
unusual? Or
there are a portion of the easements that were donated rather than purchased. So that was a big one. And then the bids came in well. We did a good job on those. But some of that was lucky. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, right? So we'll take both.
Any other comments, questions about transfer funds? I'm going to open the floor to anyone from the public who would like to speak.
Hi, I'm Tracy Green, 2501 Hartford Road, Columbia, Missouri. I'm with No Kill Columbia, and I know you guys are all tired, but you did ask for some information about our group and what we're asking for a city in regards to our local shelter. And that's just kind of a segue from what you guys had on your ballot this evening. Michelle's going to, I'll let her speak for herself, but I do have some packets. I can hand it to your city clerk so you can have that information, but then we also ask for time with each of you separately or together, and ask for direction, share information as for what we're looking for a community within Columbia.
I can assure you that each of us will be happy to meet with your organization.
Perfect. I am Michelle Bird, and I'm 2411 Kendallwood Road. We just basically wanted to introduce ourselves tonight. We represent No Kill Columbia. The No Kill movement has become the champion of the newest shelter model in the United States, commonly called the No Kill movement. It actually stands for No Kill Due to Space. We are a group dedicated to ending the necessary or the unnecessary killing of adoptable companion animals in Columbia and the surrounding areas. We aim to do this by, one, educating the public and as well as partnering with other animal welfare organizations to increase community involvement. I don't know if you're aware, but the live release rate, that means animals walking out of the shelter, whether being adopted, going to rescue, return to owner, et cetera, of the Central Missouri Humane Society has either remained stagnant or decreased over the last 3 years, even as intake has decreased. Compared with the nationwide average, the rate of euthanasia in Columbia for the same time period is 4 times the national average, or about 50% of the animals. These numbers made us realize we need to do something. We believe that by partnering as a community to raise awareness, we can make an impact on the number of animals that face euthanasia every year. Columbia's diverse rescue community has already made strides in implementing the goals of the no-kill movement. In fact, we have a huge adoption event coming up in April. Our hope is to be able to effectively support and implement the goals of the no-kill movement, and we believe that that's the best way to support meaningful change for our animals. We're committed to supporting No-Kill Columbia with awareness, education, fundraising, and any additional support needed. We invite you to join us at our first public meeting, which will be tomorrow night at the library, and that invitation is included in our packet. We've also included a No-Kill 101 to kind of get you up to speed on what we're asking for. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
I'd like to thank you for allowing me to speak to you, members of the council and mayor. My name is Jevin Jerky, and I'm here on behalf of the Columbia Hospitality Association. I'm president of that association. We represent the majority of the 34 Columbia-based motels and lodging establishments in town. I'm also owner of the 2 Super 8s here in Columbia. The CHA board met this week, and we discussed this agenda item, and this item has been out in the media for a while, so we wanted to have a forum to address this. We're against the raising of the what we perceive to be, it seems to be, the raising of the bed tax from 4% to 7%. It's a tough time in our industry. You know, it's still a recession, and we're in the thick of it, and we are not pulling out of it, and a tax increase gives us a significant headwind still, as we are still trying to pull out of that. And we're asking that we support the chamber appointed task force that is looking into this airport, the various aspects of it. We would like to see that the conclusion of this task force is the entire groundwork is laid down, the conclusion is made before we put out there that, well, our city government wants to raise the taxes, and then eventually if this is what the task force comes up with, this is where we're going to put the money. It's really hard to take away a tax once it's there, and that's one of the issues that we have, is where's the end of this? You know, it's a very big project, and we want to make sure that there's a very defined outcome, and it's beneficial to all. One of the headwinds that we do face is that we have some stiff competition from our existing businesses. And some of those are like for the MSHA, the Missouri State Missouri State High School Activity Association, the Show Me State Games. These are events that we currently have, are hosting, and we want to keep those. We don't want to forget that how important these events are. As we talk about the volunteer effort, you know, the Show Me State Games, we have a traveling trophy that we currently hold for the largest volunteer effort by an organization. So. We help them, and that's part of the reason why they are here. So really want to focus on beds, putting heads in beds. I think that's the thing that we do. And I think that's what's really nice about the existing bed tax as it is. It's really well defined. It goes 2% is for the operating funds of the CVB. Another 1% goes to the Columbia Advisory Board, or the, yeah, the Columbia Advisory, Convention Advisory Board, and they give, they basically have proposals, and they give out the money based on trying to put, again, heads in beds. I think that's what works pretty well. I think the tax has a negative impact on us. I mean, that's just the way it is, and that's unfortunate. our business, you raise the rate a dollar, which is what a tax would raise the rates. That has a negative impact on our occupancy, and so that's something that we really need to be cognizant of. And so any increase that we have has a very big impact on our industry. All right, thank you.
I'm sorry, because of the paperwork, I was talking to the other person. Could you repeat your name?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Jevin Turkey.
Okay, so yeah, now I have the name with the face. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My name is Mike Kelly. I serve on several boards. One of those boards is the City of Columbia's Advisory Board, Columbia Hospitality Association, the Missouri Restaurant Association, Columbia Charter. I also serve on the Missouri Hotel and Lodging Board. I'm also a member of the American Hotel and Lodging Association, the Missouri Hotel and Lodging Association, the American Hotel Lobby Association. Can tell you that every state in the union has fought any sort of increase in hotel motel taxes. There is a direct correlation to occupancy. As you raise those taxes, all you have to do is look to the current example of a Jefferson City. We, however, at the Missouri Hotel Lodging applaud the effort of the mayor, city manager, to look at the airport and see what needs to be done. Several cities have done that. I ask you further to look at other cities that have done that. They have built it. Hopefully they will come. That has not been seen in some cases. My hotel chain owns 13 hotels. We've seen the regression in East Peoria, Sioux City, Des Moines, and our current president, Gail Meyer, is from the Branson City Association. We are seeing that same discretion and loss of flights, even though they built it. I totally applaud the efforts of the chamber. I strongly recommend, along with the Columbia Hospitality Association, that we look to their efforts. They are approaching this from a business standpoint. They're looking at all aspects, be it advertising, infrastructure, getting people on the planes, and commitment and escrow. So I highly encourage you, before you approach it from a tax implication, that you let the chamber do its job. You've given it a task. Let it do its job. It's barely just begun. We're coming out of a slow growth. Let's continue that growth so we can continue the 4% that we currently get. Additional taxes do have a direct correlation. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Council. Barbara?
I have one thing. It's regarding the intersection of Audubon and Stadium. I've received several reports from residents from the Shepherd area that it appears the timing of the left turn light has shortened, particularly at the busy times when Shepherd Elementary is opening, beginning, and letting out, as well as in the work hour, rush hour time. So for cars going on Audubon South, turning left onto Stadium, at most two cars can get out at any time during this rush time, and often no cars can get out. So they're having a situation where buses are turning left off of Stadium to go into Audubon towards Shepherd Elementary School, and cars are turning in front of those buses because they can't get out any other way. I've heard that the cars are backed up to Azalea. So I'd like the city staff to contact MoDOT and take a look at that, the left turn lanes particularly, or the left turn lights, particularly from Audubon turning left onto Stadium going east, And then again, going from Stadium East, turning left onto Audubon, there seems to be a terrible congestion problem and a safety problem there.
I've really already said a lot, but I will just mention to the public that there is a place on MoDOT's website to report stuff and like this, and that they've in the past anyway have been very responsive. So, but yeah, I'm expecting
staff,
you'll
a year or staff two ago, has contacted MoDOT. We've had some difficulty getting responsive. They've done a study. It was improved, but something has changed there. So if staff was successful in communicating with MoDOT and having them take a look at that.
If there was something they couldn't do.
This is particularly important because now development is proceeding at Cross Creek further east, which will then just add to the traffic problem. So staff could do that.
We'll follow up.
Sure.
A couple of things. A press release came out of the city, I think on Friday, announcing an interested parties meeting for people on the east side of Columbia concerning sidewalks. The meeting will be on Wednesday the 18th from 4:30 to 6 in City Hall. It affects sidewalks on Windsor Street, Melbourne, Ripley, Pratt, and Williams. So it's people in Benton Stevens neighborhood. So I'd like to invite them to come to that meeting if they can possibly make it. Also, I wanted to clarify some information about the Short Street Garage. We approved tonight the sale of bonds for $9.175 million. I asked city manager to prepare a list of expenses for that garage on Friday, and I think everyone probably got an email Friday about it. The actual cost of the garage is going to be $11.3 million. The difference being made up by funds that are in the parking fund. $2.1 million will be taken out of the savings account to make up the difference between 9.175 and 11.3. The payment on the bonds is estimated at $686,000 per year for 20 years. If we rent, there's 425 parking spaces in that facility, 424 exactly. If we rented every space at $60 a space, the total would come to $25,500 per month. So we're losing $22,000 per month over the raw cost of building the garage over 20 years. I just want the public to be aware of that this is how garages are. They don't pay for themselves. You have to take money out of other funds, out of the parking fund. The raise in the parking meter rate over the last 8 months has generated probably in excess of $1 million, hasn't it, John, over the last 8 months?
Total.
Okay. So we were able to add money to that savings in the parking utility. So that parking utility fund is about $2.6 million in cash. We're taking 2.1 out to add to the 9.1 for the garage. So I just want the public to be aware this is not a $9 million garage. It's an $11.3 million garage.
May I ask Mr. Blattel a question about that? This budget includes the contingency, does it not? There, and I guess I'm going to ask if there are one or two contingencies. I believe you have a contingency in the bond issuing authority to that the authority is to borrow more than you think will actually ultimately borrow. And then the second contingency would be a construction contingency, which I gather is the $400,000 for the change orders. That's all a question.
Right. There no longer is a contingency in the bond purchase or bond sale itself.
Okay.
Since the change in the garage and all the things that we've changed, increasing the size of it, We took that amount out because we knew we would spend every dollar of the bond proceeds for this garage. So we took that contingency out, and so the only contingency now is the $400,000 change order contingency that we're showing on the budget schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that to make it as efficient as possible.
I see. You know, we approved on October 17th the 410 spaces. I think you've come up with 425 or somewhere in that range. But again, it shouldn't be any surprise the cost of this garage. You know, it's $25,000 of space. You know, that's just the cost of a garage. I was concerned about the size of the garage, and I was very pleased to see the architectural renditions that somebody supplied to us. I don't think it's going to be as massive as I was afraid initially it might be. I don't know what the other council members think, but I thought the architectural rendition where it really looks like four different facades masquerading, you know, as one structure really helps break it up a lot. And I think the artistic renditions really look terrific. And I think it's going to be a structure we're proud of. I'll also say that one of the people who is asking for spaces in a private conversation with me said that he wants more. So I think that the demand for this garage will be pretty high.
And we'll also, on the $60 per space, we will rent some reserve spaces for $100 a month.
Is there only 15 of those all?
No, there's going to be, we're looking at least 30 to the hotel and then 15 to Nartlith also. So we're looking at a minimum of 45. And I'm talking with the bond council right now. Based on the way we're restructuring the issue, where part of it will be taxable and part of it non-taxable, I may be able to lease additional spaces at $100 a month versus 60, because the hotel would actually like more reserved spaces at the $100 rate, but we have to do that as far as what's taxable and one not taxable. It depends, so that decides how many reserve spaces I can sell at the $100 rate.
That's very interesting. So to some extent, our hands are tied I'll take this offline and I'll call you in the morning.
Okay.
I look back at the October 3rd council meeting, and the mayor made a motion to build a $9 million garage that was amended by Ms. Hoppe to say 410 spaces. I think we need to have a new motion to approve an $11.3 million garage.
According to the minutes, the motion was for to direct staff to proceed with final plan specifications and construction of Short Street parking garage with 410 parking spaces. There was no not to exceed as part of that motion. And I think we expected, and I have been satisfied that we've received a lot of fiduciary oversight on your part, because we are constrained by revenues in the parking fund. And I am satisfied that you've done a very good job of vetting these numbers. I mean, 80 more spaces is going to cost a couple of million dollars more. That's just the math. And I think we knew that when we voted to approve 410 spaces.
Am I next?
Yes, you are.
Okay. I was going to request some sort of report with regard to the Humane Society, but in light of the presentation by No Kill Columbia, I'd like some time to sit down and meet with them to figure out what it is they're looking for and learn more about what they're doing and what they're all about. So I am going to wait until I've had a chance to meet with them and then ask the appropriate questions. The second thing I'd like to say is that we are having a community discussion. I am hosting it. I think Mr. Kespel and Ms. Hoppe will be in attendance. I'm having, hosting a community meeting regarding the traffic issues on Forum, and the meeting is taking place on Tuesday, January 24th, not Thursday, January 26th, which is what went in the paper because I did not prove my notice correctly. I apologize for that. It will be 6 o'clock at the Country Club of Missouri, and I hope those who are interested will attend. Thank you.
Barbara.
I have one more item that I failed to mention. On Walnut, there's a pedestrian crossing by the arts area, PS Gallery, and bridge on the south side. And the indicator sign in the middle of the street is often missing. There's no signs on the sides of the street indicating that there's a pedestrian crossing. There, it is painted. So I'd like to know, I'd like staff to look into putting the pedestrian signs on either side of the street. Almost all of the streets that are as busy as this one have the signs on the side of the street.
That's almost in front of my business. I know a little bit about that. That's so narrow through there that the trucks keep knocking that sign down. It just disappears once they knock it down. So
makes
the one
sense.
In the middle of the street is not working. They need to put them on the
right,
sides.
Right.
Any comments by staff? Meeting is adjourned.